Mr. Joe Stevens, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Stevens?
I was born on the 26th of February 1919 at 24 Union Street, Barnet.
And could you give us a bit of an idea of your family background, the circumstances you grew up in?
There were 13 brothers and sisters in the family.
Doesn't matter about the names.
No, no. I'm telling you where I was born. I was the seventh son of the family. And there were two brothers and three sisters born after me.
And what did your father do for a living, kiddo?
He was in the barracks in Barnet. The year, I don't know. He then was a street bookmaker. He was rather ill with emphysema and asthma in the 1941 period, when he was working as a pump attendant on the Odeon petrol station at the bottom of Barnet Hill.
So, did you have a comfortable upbringing?
A very happy upbringing, extremely happy upbringing. What you mean by comfort, I don't know. We had an outside toilet. We had a galvanised bath on a wooden fence, which was brought into the scullery on a Friday afternoon, early evening. And possibly a brother and I, or a sister, had sat on at a copper, feeding it with paper to make the water boil for the bath. I don't consider that comfort, but we were extremely happy.
Which school did you go to?
Christchurch Boys' School, Alston Road, Barnet.
And what kind of an education did you get, would you say?
An ordinary elementary education. I could have gone to what we called in those days Bing Road High Top. But the fact of the matter was, as each child became eligible for work, it was necessary to go to work, find work, whatever you'd done. And you couldn't always select a profession or a following of your choice. It was a question of who offered you the most money you worked for.
So you had to leave?
Yeah.
And what did you go to work as?
I went into a dark room in film processing at Elliot's factory in Park Road. I was there for about 6 months, and you went in the dark in the morning. You came out at 12:30 and went back in at 1:30. You came out at 5:00 at night, so you were in the dark all the time, other than Saturday morning when you worked in the light.
What were you actually doing there?
Processing film paper on rollers in a dark room. I came home and said to my mother, I must find a job somewhere else. And I went to Elm Farm Dairy, Galley Lane, and I got a job as a boy on the farm. I worked there until I was 19, when I joined the army.
And what were you doing on the farm, just at labouring?
First of all, I was assistant to a milkman, and running the doors and the milk from the float. After a couple of 3 months, I believe Mr. Davis realised my potential as a local man who everybody knew, and he bought a Welsh cob and a float, and I done a milk round of my own. At 15 and a half, I was driving a milk float, doing a milkman's job in Barnet.
Did you enjoy the work?
I did enjoy the work. In the summertime, you had to go to the hay field after you'd finished the milk, round until 8, 9, dusk at night. You started work every morning around about 6 o'clock.
Did you have any big hobbies, or, you know, with Boy Scouts, Boys Brigade?
Well, I was a Boy Catholic Boy Scout when I was 9 or 10 year old, but when I was 16, I was in the Barnet Cycling Club, and I used to ride a Claude Butler Silver Ace tandem, along with Eric Cox, who was a friend of mine, and I was doing that for several years.
What would you do? What was the sort of thing you?
I went to see my brother in Kings Norton, Birmingham. And I cycled from Kings Norton, Birmingham, back to Barnet in 3.5 hours.
Did you go in for races, or was
it? No, not as such.
That was your main hobby, though?
Main hobby, yes.
And what made you think of joining the army in 1938?
I suppose silly, adventurous ideas that come into your head. But even in 1938, there seemed to be in the background and the papers that the war was coming.
Now, what did you decide? What did you want to volunteer for? How did you go about it?
I went up to Whitehall, and I wanted to be a Royal Marine. I went in the office, recruiting office. I passed several tests, and then I had a medical. And the person testing my eyes put a wooden spoon over one eye, or a wooden spatula, type of spoon, while I read. He took it down, and I read with the other one. And he had pressed it hard on my eye. So I said, you know, give me a chance, I can read it. I know I can read it. And he was quite, not abusive, but very firm, in as much as he had been doing it for years, and he knew what he was doing. And I'd only be any good as a cook if I stayed in the Royal Marines. So I said, well, I don't want to be a cook, and I left. And I came further down Whitehall, and there was a recruiting office for the army. So I went in, and I passed all the tests, and my eyes were perfect. But then I didn't know what I wanted to join. And the recruiting sergeant said, where do you live? So I said, in Hertfordshire. He said, well, how about the Middlesex Regiment? So I said, yes, okay. Then I came home. I can't remember exactly what they gave me, but they gave me a certain amount of money at that stage and told me to report back to barracks in 2 or 3 days' time. When I came home, there was a little crying. This is difficult for me. And my father, who was a veteran of the Boer War, and the 18th Hussars, and the relief of Ladysmith, had always been a horseman. But at this stage, he said, well, boy, we'd better go and have a pint. And as the beer was going to my father's mouth, he said, what regiment did you join? And I said, the Middlesex Regiment. He nearly spilt his pint of beer. You can't go in the Middlesex Regiment. That's the infantry. You've got to be in the cavalry, the artillery. He said, when you go back, I want you to go and see the recruiting officer and tell him that your father said it's the cavalry or the artillery. And when I went back, I told the recruiting officer. And he said, well, it's a pity you didn't make up your mind in the first place. You'll have to set another test. Apparently, I'd been accepted for the infantry because I could walk and without glasses. I had to do a little arithmetic and a little dictation. And they accepted me for the artillery. I realised afterwards that in the artillery you had to take up surveying and gunnery and use different instruments that required perhaps a more knowledge in those days. And I feel because my father put me in the artillery, I'm here today
because the infantry had higher casualties, you mean?
Definitely. Without any doubt.
Now, where did you have to report to?
Woolwich Barracks, which was the depot for the Royal Artillery.
And how did that... What was your reception like when you arrived there? What month would it be, by the way? Do you remember what...
It was the 12th of the... 12th of the 12th, 1938. Yeah. 12th of December.
And what was your reception when you got there? I mean, you know, you came in as a civilian, didn't you? You were a young lad, 18.
You were issued with uniforms and clothes.
Do you remember what you got?
Two pair of trousers, two tunics. Pair of boots, socks, underwear, button stick, button brush, and a mess tin.
And
you had a darning pack, needles and things to mend clothes or socks with.
And what were the barracks like, your accommodation in them?
It was very, very sparse.
Was it a barrack or was it huts?
A barracks, oh yeah, definitely barracks. Huts didn't happen in this time, it was always barracks.
What was the barrack room like? Can you describe it?
There were about probably 30 men in one long room with 15 beds either side and a bedroom at the bottom of the dormitory which the sergeant slept in.
And what were the beds like and what... The biscuit type?
They had biscuit. It was an iron frame with biscuits on which you made up every morning. You could collapse the bed and put it up and put the biscuits on at the bottom with your blankets all folded right and things on top.
What about place for personal possessions? Did you have a cupboard or anything like that?
There was a box, yes. Not a cupboard, a box.
And if we look at a typical day, sort of pick up your training through that, you know, what time would the day start? Roughly.
About 6:30 in the morning.
What would happen first?
Wash, shave, wait for the cookhouse call, and go to breakfast.
Now, what was the food like? Breakfast, lunch, tea?
Well, bearing in mind that most of us were young boys, we were permanently hungry. And we thought they didn't give us enough food. But everybody's health and physique improved under the training.
What sort of food did you get?
In the morning, you would get six... You'd be at a table with six men down each side, which you filed in. And you, so one of the men at the end would go and get the breakfast. which would consist of a tray of six rashers of bacon and six eggs. Rather, sorry, six, 12. And bring it back and put it on the end of the table. If there was a bully boy on the end of the table, you would probably only get half your rations unless you stood up for yourself. Reverting back to the first night in the barracks.
Stay with the food. I'll pick that up. Okay. What about you get anything else you get for breakfast?
Just the bread, eggs, bacon and tea.
What about lunch?
Lunch would be meat and two veg and rice or something like that. Rice and custard.
And tea?
Tea would probably be a dish of Worcester sauce, Daddy's sauce on a tin plate in the middle of the table. The man at the end of the table would go and get a tray of corned beef and sandwiches, of bread. The bread you would dip into the Daddy's sauce along with the corned beef.
Now, what were the... I know you didn't feel you got enough, but what was the quality like?
I can't say it was poor, but it could have been better. More appetising. Presented better.
Now, we now go back to this first incident on the first night. What happened?
I went in and filed into the table, and I wasn't aware of the procedure. And before I knew it, my ring of pork sausage or spam, whatever it was, had gone. And there was nothing there for me, just the bread. One of the chaps said, call the sergeant and complain. So I said, no, just be with me and watch me tomorrow night. That was my first experience of knowing that you had to be robust and stand up for your meals. I want to emphasise this only in the barracks, the training centre, not when I went to a unit.
So what happened next time then?
The next time I made sure I grabbed as I went by and I got my fair share.
Was there any actual bullying?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Not myself. I was fortunate enough to have a good physique and strong. And I had no experience of bullying myself. But I had a boy in the barracks who was being bullied. And they threatened to throw his bed out the window. And I said to the culprit, the bully, if you throw his bed out the window, your bed's going out the window after it. And he didn't throw the bed out the window. And this young man followed me to, I call him a young man, I don't know why, he's the same age as me, went with me to Trowbridge Barracks in Wiltshire, the first depot we went to.
Hang on, I'll come on to that, yeah. So that was one case. Was there much bullying, though?
Well, it was the bullying that I experienced. That was quite extensive bullying. But there was always pushing and shoving, and the weaker one got the worst seat, although he didn't respond.
Now, after breakfast, and we'll go back to the typical day, what would happen after breakfast?
Marching drill.
Tell me about drill. How did you take to drill?
Well, we were issued two pair of boots, not one. We were issued two pair of boots, this is recorded, but they were ordinary black, raw leather. Good quality, but very hard. And we spent 3 months polishing the toe cap and the pad on the back and burnishing the studs on the sole in preparation for our pass-out day. You used blacking and spit and rubbed in rings and rings and rigs, and eventually your toe cap was like... what do they call it? Painting. like a patent toe cap. And the sergeant was issued with whatever number of belts were required for the training unit, and he had to polish those belts to the same standard throughout, which you wouldn't wear until your pass-out day.
Now, hang on, we're running a bit out there, yeah. Pass out, but what about drill itself? How did you take to it?
Well, yes, I...
Did you like it?
Yes.
Did you see the point of it? Then?
Not at that stage, no. But later on in my career, I realised the point in repetition, drumming it in.
And what other things might you be doing in the morning? What other kinds of training?
Physical training, PT, gym work.
What sort of stuff would you do there?
Well, first of all, you stripped off to your shorts. You ran into the gymnasium room. And before you were handed over to the gym instructor, your sergeant instructor stood there. And you had to pull your pants down. And he would inspect you down the front. Turn round and he inspected down the punt, and then he smacked your bum with a stick and you were all clear to go. Unfortunately, each and every person didn't get a clear, and sometimes they had to be scrubbed, which was a punishment which I didn't agree with at that time, but that's how it worked.
And what would you do in the PT session when you actually got in there and got started?
Climbing the ropes, wall bars, forward rolls and things which I was never good at. All the other stuff I could do, but every time I run down to do a forward roll over it, the PT instructors either side used to get me and throw me, and I used to land on my back another 5 yards away.
And any route marches?
Not as such that I can remember there.
So what else? You've got PT session. What after that? What else might you be doing?
You've got... it's a bit long time ago, you know. Gunnery. Oh, yeah.
Tell me about gunnery training.
Well, gunnery training, in those days, I was on a 25-pounder gun.
In 1938? 18-pounder?
No. The only guns that I can recollect is the 25-pounder... with a platform that you used to pull the gun up onto so you could traverse it.
Well, tell me about what gun drill you did.
You took it in turns as the layer, as the loader, and the ammunition people.
So what was each of those jobs? Do you remember what they were? What you'd have to do?
Well, as a layer, you would had a seat to sit on, and you sat on the left-hand side of the gun. And you had...
What did it do?
It had 360 degrees on it. And you set it according to the instructions you were getting from the number one. And you had... I can't think of the names of the instruments now. You had an instrument on the side that you levelled that gave you your elevation or depression. Then there were a couple of loaders or ammunition men who you'd bring up the ammunition. You would have the loader would kneel... behind the gun layer, who were passing it, and it was split ammunition, in as much as you put the round in and the charge you put behind it, which was a brass case that had three different charges in it, three different colours. Charge one, you took out two. Charge two, there were two. Charge three, you left all three in, which would come down with a sequence of orders. Now,
and you'd practice all these positions?
Yeah, oh yes, all of them. And it used to go like troop target number one ranging, HE-109 cap on, 030 degrees, angle of sight 1 degree elevation. Charge 2. Load, ready, fire.
Now, I presume you wouldn't actually do any firing at Woolwich.
No.
But you'd do that later.
Yeah, yeah.
So anything else? So we've got, anything else you might be learning?
Well, you've got what they call troop target registration. This is when the officers and the OP personnel get to the front and they're observing the area. They used to register rounds so that if it was necessary to fire, they would have a recorded picture in front of them so that it would enable them to get the fixed fire onto the enemy quicker by virtue of the fact that they'd been there 3 days, but on their first day up they made this recording and recorded on the maps of where the actual rounds had dropped when it was fired at 7,000 yards.
So you had to learn how to do that,
yeah.
Registering target. Anything else?
Well, it's all done.
Did you learn any of the mathematics of gunnery? Because you know all the trigonometry and stuff that you'd need if you were going to be an assistant.
Well,
at this stage?
Yeah. Not at this stage, no. Because my career changed. When I got to the unit, I went off gunnery. I wasn't on gunnery at all.
So what else did you learn while you were at Woolwich Barracks?
Well, there's nothing else I can recollect now other than marching and rifle drill and sentry drill and
what
things
like that.
What was
sentry drill?
Well, you were only getting it. You weren't actually a sentry there. You were getting sentry drill. It used to be something along the lines of sentry go drill on. Your guard room is to the rear, the front is the way you are now facing. When turning about, always turn away from the guard room, which meant you didn't put the back to the guard room. I can remember those things. But my gunnery, my pattern changed when I went to...
What about preparing for kit inspections? Do you remember much of that? How strict were they?
Yeah, very strict. Extremely strict.
How would you get ready for it?
Well, your blankets had to be as though they were toy soldiers. They had to be formed dead to the same size. Your towel had to be over the back of the bed. Your spare boots and things had to be on show, the ones you were cleaning, preparing for pass out.
Anything else?
Not that I can recollect there.
And what would the officer do when he inspected them? Or was it the officer?
Well, the officer would come round along with the sergeant. And he would, if he complained, the sergeant would be punishing you, or you'd be confined to barracks for 3 days, or you'd be told to prepare your bed. You'd be inspected 3 times a day, and each time they'd find a fault with it, and you had to do something else.
And what about recreations? What would you do in your time off?
Walk round Woolwich.
Did you drink?
Didn't have enough money to drink. You almost spent your money when you got it on the Friday night on fish and on chips and vinegar and a pack of cigarettes. I think in those days we used to get, 12 and 6 a week. But you weren't allowed to draw your full pay at Woolwich. Because at the end of your 3 months training, you were going to go home on leave before you were posted to the unit. And the authorities realised that if you got the money, you'd spend it anyway and probably have no money to go home with. So they used to only give you a certain amount of money and the rest used to go to your credits. But there used to be stoppages, what they call barrack room damages. If anybody broke a window or anything like that, that would be totted up against them and the costs would be split between them. And also, while you were at Woolwich Barracks, there was, if there was a deserter or anybody deserted and their clothes were there, they auctioned them. You could buy them because you had a clothing allowance. And every time your boots wore out, you had to buy yourself a pair of boots from your clothing allowance. So if you could buy a pair of boots that suited you, at a much cheaper price, it conserved your money, your clothing allowance.
Well, how did you get on with the rest of the lads once you'd settled in?
Very well.
Were they all from the same sort of background as yourself? I mean,
yes, near enough. As far as, yeah, I would say yes.
Did you make any special friends?